It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome back to Money for Lunch. Man, things are happening. Here it is. It's the 30th of August, which is unbelievable. I don't know if it's a sign that I'm getting so much older, but this year has blown by. It's freaking unbelievable. What is it? So next month is the beginning. No, it's the last month of the third quarter. So, you know, we're the fourth quarter rearing its pretty little head, or maybe it's an ugly head, depending on how your year's lining up. So here we are at Money for Lunch, bringing you literally bite-sized nuggets of information that you can apply to your business and really start to hone in on making a difference. And so we're going to get started right away with my first guest, Deborah Ashley. Deborah Ashley is a social media strategist, helps online-based entrepreneurs to develop and implement social media strategies to increase visibility, connect with their ideal client, and maximize sales. Deborah draws on her two decades of combined sales, marketing, and business development experience to develop these success strategies. This includes a 10-year career in corporate sales, where she generated an average of $300,000 monthly, small business consulting and business ownership, where she was featured on the O magazine, the Oprah magazine, and the New York Times. She's best known for her ability to build social media strategies based on her client's strengths and skills. And her website is Trivo, T-R-I-V-O-O. That's T-R-I-V-O-O.com. Trivo. Anyway, I just screwed up her name, but we're going to bring her on. She'll correct me. Deborah Ashley, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed your intro, too, especially about the year flying by so quickly, because I remember I just telling my friend, I was like, I think we just celebrated New Year's Eve, so... Yeah, it's quite interesting.
I know, it's crazy. Well, let's dive into this, because I think that even though social media has been around, you know, for a long time now, people are still confused mm-hmm. by it. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are out there yelling that social media is the best thing ever. And there's some people, and I think most people, I just don't know what to do with it. So let's talk about this. What are the benefits of social media marketing?
Okay, so I agree. It's the best thing ever when you know what you're doing, especially as a small business owner or, you know, just a personal brand. Just because if you think about it, you have those big brands, you know, your Nike, your Coca-Cola, all of those brands, they've always had advantages over the years just because of the money they had for advertising. With social media marketing, you have free advertising. You have your clients who are right there, potential clients and current clients who are right there in front of you, pretty much telling you exactly what they want. So, I mean, you know, that beats it. So that you know, you can't do anything else but listen to those clients. And a lot of the clients that I work with, they're service-based organizations. So I always tell them, listen to what your clients want and then build your product or service around their needs. That saves a lot of time and money. So that's the biggest benefit, I'd say.
And you know what? And I want to emphasize this, because a lot of people are out there guessing what it is their clients want instead of asking them or listening, or, you know, and there's so many ways that you can do it, not only on social media, but surveys and things of that nature. I can't tell you how many clients I've talked to who have launched a product, have spent a year or two developing that product only to have it flop because it's not what their clients wanted.
Exactly. It's what they wanted or what they thought the client wanted.
It's what they wanted.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I liken it to corporations who pay probably hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to, you know, to get focus groups when this is free. So that's really the interesting thing.
So let's talk about this. Here I am, I'm on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. What's the best way to attract your ideal client via social media?
So I think the most important thing is first knowing who your ideal client is. And I always say it's not, you can't just say it's someone who's 25 to 35 who's a female who works. You really have to dig deep and down in there. What are their pain points? Meaning what keeps them up at night? What do they worry about? What do they like to do on their downtime? How do they search for things online? So once you know your ideal client, now you position yourself in front of them. I do a lot of work on Instagram. Instagram and Twitter too. So once you know your ideal client, you position yourself as the expert in their eyes. So the way to attract them is to provide a lot of value. You can do that by posting tips or video, and we're going to get to video too. Video is a very important aspect. But you do that on Instagram and Facebook by posting a lot of tips on what they can do to alleviate the concern that they have. That's one way. Another way, of course, is by referrals. I do a lot of posts for clients where it says, tag a friend who has this type of issue and they would like a solution. So then you have other people who will tag their friends, and then their friends know about you. So as you build your following, more people will see you and more people will know about what you have to offer.
Yeah, and I love this idea of asking people to tag somebody that might have this problem, because it's a great way to get the word of mouth out. It's a great way to see other people, promoting your brand without you having to look like you're pushy or salesy.
Exactly. Because the key, especially when it comes to social media, if you think about, even 2-3 years ago, Instagram wasn't for business. It was just, and Facebook too, the same thing. We're just there to connect with our friends and family and share photos of our kids growing up and Christmas photos and anything else. So you have to kind of do it in a way of, that takes a little bit of finesse, where you're educating the masses or you're entertaining them, but then you also put a little bit of sales in your call to action in the comments. So you're not pushing them to buy your product, but they love you so much, they're interested in what you actually do. And I'm sure you've heard the term, the know, like, and trust factor. And that's what you're building when you're doing these things on social media.
Yes, yes. And I want to talk about this a little bit more, because I think a lot of people have a handicap because they really do not know who their ideal client is, Deborah. I think that most people, like you said, they have a surface, recognition. Hey, it's female between the age of 25 and 50 and whatever. But beyond maybe 3 or 4 little generalities, they really don't know anything about their clients. They don't know what's keeping them up at night. They don't know the conversation in their heads. They don't know their real pain. And so therefore, they're missing the boat.
Right. So I can tell you the way that I found my ideal client, because initially, I've worked in marketing for years, but it comes easier when you work for a big corporation because of the money that's put into it. But the way I found my ideal client, and it happens a lot with small business owners, especially the service-based, sometimes you yourself are your ideal client. So for me, I transitioned from working in the corporate world for 20-odd years. And now I've had businesses before, but now when you take a full time and you really, you don't have another source of income, those are the things that you worry about. Am I doing this right? How can I make myself visible? What should I do to make my talent noticed? So those are the little things that you think about as a business owner when you're trying to transition and make a living full time. So for a lot of others who are not their own ideal client, I would say, and I go to a lot of Chamber of Commerce events, meet maybe 10, 15 people and spend time with them, have coffee, spend time with them, ask them specific questions, like I mentioned before, what keeps you up at night? What's your family life like? Who is your best resource when you're looking to buy an item? Do you spend a lot of time online? What's your favorite social media platform? Why don't you use one over the other? There's a lot of little questions you can ask. And then the great thing, the answers that your ideal client gives you, like say a mom with kids. I have, I'm trying to start my own business and I have 2 little kids at home and it's a little hard to manage my family and manage my business. So now when you're posting things like that, you post their exact words and that's going to resonate with those other moms that you're trying to target. So you pretty much use the words of your ideal client to attract the rest of your clients.
Yes, and I love that. I love that idea. So if you don't know who your ideal client is, then you cannot use their language because and you can't get
right.
in their head. And what's so nice is, again, we have all these tools available to us. You can use social media for surveying and things of that nature. You can go to places like SurveyMonkey. And now there's a couple other, you know, SurveyMonkey does this as well. But there are other places where not only can you do a survey to your list, but if you don't have a list, you can pay them a small fee and they will blast your survey out to a specific audience and you can get feedback that way.
Right. Yeah. I also think and video is a great way to do it too. You know, even go in Facebook Live, a lot of people like, but I love Periscope. Periscope is so wide open. With Facebook Live, it's mostly hidden those that you're already friends with or that like your page. But with Periscope, you're hidden the masses. So you can even ask a simple question, you know, tell me if you are this type of person who has issues with this, this, and this, and this. Put a one in the comments if you agree with me, and they put a one, and then you can continue. You can go through your entire survey on Periscope. But it does take a while
to build
a following, but once you do, you have that, you know, that audience who's looking to you for the answers. And then, of course, like I said before, you use their answers in order to promote your line and promote your service and everything like that.
So let me ask you this, because you hit something that, again, I know people ask this question all the time. Which social media
mm-hmm.
should I use? Should I use Twitter, Instagram, Facebook? I mean, where should I go? So what do you say to people like that? Where is a place for them to start?
Well, there's no pretty answer, I would say. It's where your ideal client hangs out. So if it was me advising a client, and, you know, it depends on your personality and if you have a great presence, I tell everyone not only to get a Facebook, you know, I think everyone should have a presence on Facebook, but if you do feel comfortable in front of the camera, get on Periscope, get on Facebook Live, get on YouTube. Then you can kind of ask your perfect clients, your ideal clients, where they typically hang out. But there, you can't just guess at it. There's no really clean answer of what platform you should start at first. But I think Facebook, of course, Twitter, I think you'll get a lot of educators. You'll get a lot of company corporate leaders as well as LinkedIn. With Pinterest, I don't really do much with Pinterest, but Pinterest, you get a lot of moms. You get a lot of craft makers. Facebook, you get just about everyone since that was the original, you know, so-called besides MySpace,
right.
That was the original platform. And then Instagram is a great growing audience too, as well as Snapchat. So I hope that answered the question. It's kind of broad, but it's a little tough to answer, you know?
But you know what? And it goes back to what we were discussing earlier, knowing your ideal client. And if you don't know that your ideal clients are all on Facebook or all on Twitter or you know, whatever, when I say all, I should say mostly on Twitter or mostly on Facebook
mm-hmm.
or maybe it's Instagram or Pinterest, then again, it just gives you homework to do. Because I know a lot of people who are on all these social medias and they're not really using any of them. And, you know, and so therefore they're really kind of deflating their value because they don't know who they're targeting. They don't know how to interact with these people. And so so it goes back to knowing your ideal client. And knowing your ideal client means you know what social media they're mainly on. Because Instagram, to me, I don't use Pinterest either. I started to, but I didn't really connect with me. Instagram connected with me a little bit more strongly. I seem to resonate with a lot of people there. So, in fact, you and I connected, I think, via Instagram. Is that right?
We did, yes.
Yeah.
And
so
then Instagram has very high engagement, which I love.
Yes. And again, it's one of those things where you have to know where they're at. You have to know why people are there.
Right.
So let's talk about this. You mentioned video a couple of times, and I just now started using video. My goal this year was to do a video every week. And I think out of the 30 weeks or 36 weeks that we've expired already, I think I've only made like 10 or 15 videos, so I'm very far behind. But video, especially live streaming, you mentioned Periscope a couple of times. This is really starting to take off. This is starting to be
huge.
The new. Talk about this.
I think it's very, very good for not only service-based organizations, but also professional brands. I have a client who's a CPA. He has his own firm, and he's always just done workshops. But, of course, that's you're keeping yourself local when you just do workshops. He decided he's doing, instead of Periscope, he's doing Facebook Live. He's more comfortable with that. It's the same exact thing, really. But he decided to get on Facebook Live, and it has increased his engagement by 300%. So now he does a lot of things, a lot of, like, you know, calls with clients, a lot of private sessions. It really, really quickly increases that like factor, and especially the trust factor, because people will do business with you. If they like you, that's fine, but if they trust you, they will hand over the credit card and they will, you know, do business with you if they trust you and they know you and they like you. So that's what video does in my eyes. It increases that time frame between when you get to know someone and when they reach that level of trust.
Yes. This is what video reminds me of. If anybody's ever received a business card from a real estate agent. Real estate agents have done this ever since I can remember. In fact, more than any other industry I've ever met, real estate agents always have their picture on their business card. I think the next industry that uses picture on their business card more would be maybe speakers, but definitely real estate agents. And so video now is the new version of that. This is who I am. This is what I sound like and look like, and this is how I really believe. And this brings you your ideal clients. People are going to resonate with you and say, hey, this Deborah lady really knows what she's talking about. Let me engage with her. Let me find out how she can help me. And the other thing is that you need to do more than one video. I think you mentioned, you know, get it on Periscope. And maybe not every day, but at least once a week to start building that engagement.
Right. And I would even suggest 3 times a week. You know, we kind of liken it to, say, even a classroom environment. Pick a day of the week or 3 days, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You get on every single day at 9 a.m. So now you're going to start building followers, because everyone expects at 9 a.m. I have a lesson on accounting principles 101. A lot of people do things for 45 minutes to an hour, but if we think of the internet age, I don't have a long attention span that's going to last for an hour. So I would say give yourself maybe 15 minutes of you educating your followers and maybe 10 minutes of Q&A, because everything's more about what the customer wants. So you're going to get the information from them, and then you can even use some of those questions to fuel your next video. But I think at least 3 times a week is really going to build that following really quickly.
I agree. I think it has to be consistent. You can't be like I'm doing this this year. Like I said, my goal was to do it once a week, and I've been doing it like once every third week. It's just not going to build the engagement. You look at these guys on YouTube who have this massive following, and then you look how often they post on YouTube, and you'll see that sometimes it's almost every day. Sometimes, like you said, 3 times a week, but at least weekly.
Right.
And they have a large following because they're posting on a regular basis. They're talking to their ideal client. They're not trying to engage with everybody. They're just trying to engage with their ideal audience.
Right. Yeah, I have a saying, if you try to reach everyone, you reach no one. So it's very important to be very specific.
Yes. And you know what? And I hope everybody picks that up. If you're trying to reach everyone, you will reach no one. And you know, in a great example of that is, let's look at the top news shows. There's Good Morning America and Today. Those are the top big ones in the morning.
Right.
You know about those shows, but what do they stand for? Well, they stand for a collection of stuff, right? Because at any minute now, they're talking about current news. They could be talking about entertainment. They could be talking about food, recipes.
Right.
And so they don't necessarily, you know, they're trying to reach everybody, so they don't stand for any one particular thing. So when you are thinking, man, I need to find out what's happening in the stock market, you're not going to go to Good Morning America or to the Today Show, because that isn't the connection. You might go to CNBC or you might go to another, Fox Business to find out what's happening
right.
in the business world, because that's mm-hmm. specifically what their brand's all about.
Right. And you even think of those shows that just came out of nowhere and grew so quickly, like Dr. Oz, of course, he came from Oprah, but you have a show called mm-hmm. The Doctors. They have a huge
yes.
audience because that's all they focus on. And, of course, Dr. Oz is very lovable, so, you know, he made a name for himself and Dr. Phil and all of those, but they're very specific on what they focus on and who they focus on. So I think, you know, I'm trying to remember for Dr. Oz, I think he typically just really focuses on women issues, but that's who watches daytime TV mostly, you know?
Sure, sure. And again, Dr. Oz, was another Oprah Winfrey discovery, just like Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Phil, right? And so,
right.
And Dr. Phil has a unique brand. He stands for, you know, when I think of Dr. Phil, I think of weird relationship type stuff. Not as
right,
bad
mental
as Jerry
health.
Springer, but kind of,
no.
you know, kind of in that, you know, kind of in that area, you know, a little bit more serious, right? And
right,
then
exactly.
Dr. Oz, you're right. I think of Dr. Oz's health, dieting. He does everything
mm-hmm.
that has to do with health. And so he owns that. What's that?
Nutrition also, yeah.
Nutrition, yeah, so absolutely. He owns that in my mind, and that's how branding works. Deborah, we're out of time, but I'd love to bring you back and talk more about social media and entrepreneurship. It's been a pleasure having you on, and looking forward to have you on again.
Thanks, Brett. I really loved it. Thanks so much.
You bet. Good stuff there from Deborah Ashley. And if you want to find out more about Deborah, you can find out more about her at Trivoo. It's TRIVOO.com. Trivoo. TRIVOO. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, this is nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. You know, sometimes it just lines up. The stars line up. And so today's show, and I don't want to say it was accident, but this is part of what Amy does. She'll put these shows together. And so today's show is really how to use social media. And so my next guest is Richard G. Lowe, Jr. And Richard is the best-selling author of over 30 books, all available on Amazon or wherever good books are sold, including How to Sell on eBay, Focus on LinkedIn, Safe Computing is Like Safe Sex. He's a photographer and has created coloring books based on his photos, the Beautiful Belly Dancer coloring book series, also available on Amazon, and as a ghostwriter has completed 12 books. Richard G. Lowe, Jr., welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here as well, because we're going to be talking about LinkedIn. And I think that a lot of people think of LinkedIn as a place where, I guess, you go job hunting, or you put your profile up there and then you never look at it again unless you need something. So talk about this. What do you see that LinkedIn is useful for?
Well, LinkedIn is useful if you want to create a personal brand. That's what its primary use is. It's not a sales tool. It's more what you would call a marketing tool, where you define what you want people to see about you, what your image is. So like me, I want people to see that I'm a writer, a ghostwriter, that I'm competent, that I meet schedules, things like that. And that's the way you write your LinkedIn to do that. If you were a circus clown, you'd want people to see you as a circus clown. So you'd have a circus clown picture and you'd have funny stories and things like that. It just kind of depends on what you're trying to do. And then when people search for you, they find you based on that brand. And then they read it and they like it and they get in contact with you. So the whole idea is to present a brand that people like, that has your message, to get them to contact you and connect with you and start communicating with you.
If that makes sense. I like that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know what's interesting is LinkedIn recently bought out by Microsoft. I think they are really, I want to use the word, catching up, you know, in the sense that, for example, right now, hashtags do not work on LinkedIn, but I think that's, you know, they're working on changing that. At the beginning of this year, you know, when you posted a YouTube link, it wasn't embedded. And now when you post a YouTube link, it embeds right into your LinkedIn feed. So they are catching up, I want to say, to the rest of social media integration type features.
Yes, they are. It's got a lot of useful features on its own. For example, you can, when you post, you can make it public just like on Facebook, but you can also simultaneously post to Twitter. So all of your updates can go to Twitter, and that's very useful. It has applications. You can put photos up, articles, all kinds of cool things.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know about the Twitter integration. That is nice. Let's talk about this because people always want to know, how do I make a profile that generates leads? Talk about that.
Got it from a user's point of view. If you were searching for somebody, what's the first thing you see? Well, you see a picture. So the first thing you look at in your LinkedIn profile is your photo. Does it present you in the brand that you're trying to portray? And I do LinkedIn profiles for a living. I do about 30 of them a month for a company called LinkedIn Makeover. And I interview people. And the first thing I do is see their photos. And most of the time, they're selfies or pictures somebody took in a bar, something like that. And that is not what you want to have on LinkedIn. It's not Facebook. What you want to do is spend the money, because you're supposed to be a business professional, and get a professional headshot. Get it. Professional knows how to pose you, knows how to smile you. Because one thing, if you've ever been in show business, you know, is you think you're smiling, but the camera doesn't see it. You have to over-smile. You have to overdo things. That's something most actors know. That's why Shakespearean actors look like they're overacting, because they're acting on stage. Well, the same thing is true with photos. You have to over-smile. You have to look at the camera, and then a professional photographer will get rid of the light spots from any flash and clean up any blemishes and things, and you'll have a really good photo, which should portray your brand. And then you want to, the next thing people look at is the headline, because that's what appears in searches, the photo and the headline. So your headline should tell exactly in 100 characters, I think it's 100 characters, exactly what you do. Mine says I'm a ghostwriter, a best-selling author, and things like that. The headline is also important for searches, because it's probably the number one thing that LinkedIn looks at for making you known in searches. So if you have author or entrepreneur in your headline, you're going to appear in the search for those, most likely. Entrepreneur is probably not a good one to have in your headline, by the way, because everybody does it, so it doesn't do you much good. Yeah, and you want to avoid filler words. Don't say things like, the best at, or excellent, or any, you know, LinkedIn's just going to remove those, and people just ignore them. Put in real words that have real meaning. And then the third thing is the summary. The summary, you have 2,000 characters to write a story about your brand. And write it as a story. You write it in first person. So I'm talking to you in LinkedIn. Somebody's not talking about me. It's not like a resume. And I'm telling you about me and about my brand and about what I'm portraying. I'm not telling you about my company so much, although I can include that. I'm not telling you about my products, although I can include those. I'm telling you about me and my relation to those things. And that's important, because when I look at a profile on LinkedIn, I want to find out about you if I'm looking at your profile. I don't want to find out about other stuff necessarily. The first thing I want to find out about is, what do you do? Who are you? Are you trustable? Do you have a good message? Are you the person that I want? And that those are the three most important things. Everything else is secondary after those things.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And you're absolutely right. I want to kind of pinpoint on this or emphasize this, is when you're writing out anything, whether it's sales copy or your LinkedIn profile or whatever, you should be talking to that one person, that ideal client in your head, right? You should be talking to that one person, not thinking of the hundreds or thousands or whatever. It's the one person, and that allows you to have, a much better focus, a much better experience, or give your client a much better experience delivering real useful information. And let me ask you this about LinkedIn, because LinkedIn has this ability to endorse people, right? So
yes.
Does that carry any weight? Do you when you're looking for somebody to hire on LinkedIn, do you look to see, oh, look, this guy's been endorsed 1,000 times? What's your thought on this endorsement strategy that LinkedIn has?
Well, I should tell you first that I was the director of IT at Trader Joe's for 20 years, so I used this kind of product to find people. So I have a lot of experience.
Okay.
I probably hired over 100 people, and the internet was part of the hiring process. First thing you do when you're going to hire anybody is you search on the internet to find out what you can about the person. The endorsements, you've got two things. You've got recommendations and endorsements. Recommendations are very valuable. Endorsements are minorly valuable. And the reason why is because it's kind of automatic. If you've ever been on LinkedIn, I go look at your profile and you're connected to me. It says, do you want to endorse this guy? I'm like, okay, whatever. And you just endorse him. And it becomes very automatic, and people build up endorsements that really don't have a lot of meaning. It just kind of means somebody clicked on a button that said he had this particular skill. The main value of it is I can look at your profile, and I can see that you have a certain set of skills in a glance, and I can see a lot of people in one form or another agreed with that. So it's like you can do like a 5-second glance. Okay, yeah, this guy, he does radio shows and he's a social media expert. Okay, good. Yeah, I do want to talk to him. No, I'm not interested in that. That's all really endorsements are good for.
Gotcha. Yeah, and it's because I've always found it fascinating. And you're right, it is automatic. It's so automatic that it almost loses its power, right? Because I get endorsed all the time from people who have not hired me to do anything.
I get endorsed by people all the time that I barely know because I have 3,000 connections on LinkedIn, and I don't know 3,000 people. They're just people who said, you want to connect? And I said, sure. And then they endorse me for all this stuff, which theoretically means I'm this great person who knows all these things, but how would they know? We just met. You know?
Right. Right.
That's the problem with endorsement.
Right. And I want to talk about this because this has happened to me a couple of times, and to me it's such a big red flag. I've had people who said, hey, I just endorsed you for this, that, and the other thing. Would you endorse me? Dude, I don't even know who you are. That's, you know, just let's not be connections anymore. And so, and again, I'm sure that it works 80% of the time. I'm sure that most people say, okay, you endorse me, so I'll endorse you, which again makes that whole endorsement thing worth even less.
Yeah, there's really no way to make endorsements worth very much, no matter how you implement it, because all it really is a click of a button, and it's based on trust. And most people, as you just said, give me an endorsement, and I'll give you one too. That really kind of defeats the purpose. So I wouldn't put a lot of weight into it. Now, recommendations, on the other hand, which are similar to endorsements, are much more valuable.
And recommendations – yeah, let's talk about that, because recommendations theoretically comes from somebody that you've done work with or for. Talk about that.
Well, a recommendation is where somebody says, just like in the real world, they write in a short testimonial about some business you've done or something you did good or how good you are or something like that. Usually it's a paragraph or two. They're pretty short. And they're always glowing, of course, because otherwise why would you write it? It's called a recommendation. It's not called, you know, anything else. So you're recommending this person, and your name is attached to it. Unlike an endorsement, although the endorsement does have your name attached to it, it's kind of hidden and far away. On a recommendation, your name is right there. So if I give you a recommendation, people know that I, Richard Lowe, said you're a great person and you give great radio shows and you did a great interview. Everybody knows I did that. So it directly affects my credibility if it turns out you're not with those things. People might think, well, who's this Richard guy who recommended this person who's really not any of that stuff? It's much more visible, and it takes more work. An endorsement, you click a button. On a recommendation, you got to sit down and you got to write it, and that takes a few minutes or longer, depending on how quickly you write. So it has a lot more weight.
Because it requires more on the person who's doing the recommending. So absolutely. All right, so let's talk about this because, a lot of people are confused what to do with LinkedIn. So I want to get your thoughts on this. What should I be doing on a regular basis on LinkedIn?
This is the interesting part. A lot of people who come to me in the LinkedIn profile service think, oh, I'll make this great LinkedIn profile, and then I'll just go back to doing my job, and I don't have to worry about it. And then 6 months later, they may come back and say, you know, I didn't get much from that LinkedIn profile. It didn't do much for me. Well, the reason is you're not actually doing the work part of network. Networking requires work. That's part of the word, and it's that way on purpose. You have to do work to make it work. Just as if you were in a trade show. Let's say you were at a trade show or you were doing a networking event. You have to wander around the room, talk to people, hand out your business card in such a way that they want it. You can't just throw it in their hands because they're going to put it in their pocket and throw it away. Make relationships and so forth. And that's exactly what you want to do on LinkedIn. The first thing you want to do is you have the ability to do updates. So post an update. So every once in a while, I like to do it every day. You put a couple sentences there that says, I'm in a class and I'm learning this new wonderful thing about this whatever I'm doing, and I'd like to share that with you all. And or you could say, I read this article on something or other, and here's what I'd like to say about it, and here's the link to it. I'm on the internet a lot, and I read a lot of articles, so posting a link to that article takes virtually no time. Do that several times a week. You have the ability to have a mini blog on LinkedIn. Do that if you like to write, at least once a month, and you'll start to build a nice following. If you don't like to write and you're a manager or something, or you want to have a blog anyway, you can outsource that, and you can have somebody write the blog for you. There's lots of contractors or people who will do that for you. Put in pictures, videos. In other words, keep it working, keep it busy. Change your profile every once in a while because you're alive, right? So your profile should change. You got a promotion. You had some success. You got an award. You wrote something. You got a new charity. You got rid of a charity. Make sure your profile stays accurate. And I look at mine once a quarter and update it. This has several advantages. First of all, you're a living being, so it makes you look like you're alive. Second, it builds up your credibility because you're giving out information. Third, you're being well known as an influencer. And fourth, the search engines like change. If your LinkedIn profile is static, the search engine in LinkedIn and the search engine in Google and Bing and all the others start to think you're not really there, and they lower you down the rankings. If it's not static, if it's busy, they're going to raise you up in the rankings, even just a little bit, because there's something happening. Search engines like to see things happening. So that's what they look for. So you have to do this work. And you have to make it snazzy. By snazzy, I mean look good. Make sure you've got some videos up. For example, I did a profile for somebody who has a leather factory and it's under construction. He made a little video, 2 minutes long, that was like a virtual tour through the leather factory as it's being constructed. And he posted that on his LinkedIn on the summary. All of a sudden, his customers can see, wow, that's what he's doing. He's got this huge leather factory, and it's huge, and it's got all these machines and all kinds of cool stuff that looks really dangerous, actually. And it adds a little bit of credibility to what he's saying. If you throw a video up, they shouldn't be long, 1 to 2 minutes at the most, or a PowerPoint or a picture or something. Don't overdo it. Don't put hundreds. Just enough to add a little bit of pizzazz and change them. You change them once in a while. You get bored, just like people. It gets boring, so take that one down and put up another one, maybe once a month or something. Change them out and put in some more. That's what you have to do with your LinkedIn is keep it working. And instead of playing on Facebook, do it on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's going to have much more advantage to you in the professional world, because Facebook really is social. It's social media, and it means social. It's for family, friends, and stuff. And when I think of LinkedIn, I think of business partners, people, customers, suppliers, vendors, employees, employers. And for survival, I'm going to play more on LinkedIn. I'm going to keep that busy and spend most of my effort there, and then I'm going to get people coming to me. And to give you a little bit of a case study on my own, I started on LinkedIn about 3 years ago, and I was getting maybe one connection request a month, except for the people I knew and the people I begged to connect with me. And as I, you know, friends, family, coworkers. And as I started to do what I'm saying to you, now I get 30 connection requests a day. It's becoming so many that it's almost annoying. And, you know, of course, I say no to a lot of them, because there's red flags about some connection requests, and some, you know, you want to have a quality network as opposed to a quantity network, really. But it really works, but it takes work. That was my speech.
I like that. Well, you know what, and I want to talk about this, because back in a real life example, look, we've all gone to networking meetings, and the thing I've noticed is that everybody at a networking meeting is there to sell something. Unfortunately, nobody's there to buy anything. And I think LinkedIn's the same way. People think that LinkedIn is, you know, you go there, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, where you make a new connection and they immediately try to sell you something. You know, and sometimes, you know, so I have a mixed feeling about that, in the sense that, you know, that sometimes, that offends me, and other times it doesn't. I guess it depends on the mood that I'm in. What is your take on that?
Well, LinkedIn is not a sales platform. It's a personal branding and networking platform. And you have to think of it that way. Of course, there's going to be some selling. It happens. Sure. And of course, all of us want everybody to buy our products or services, or even us to hire us, because part of you're trying to sell you. But I actually interviewed one of the founders of BNI, the largest networking group in the United States. His name's Ron Susnick, and I wrote a book, and it's on Amazon about him. And he told me the secret to networking, and it's just a few words. The secret to networking is, what can I do for you? And that is the secret. You just look for people and you ask them, what can I do for you? Well, I need this and this and this. Oh, good. I know that guy, Ben, over there. He can help you with that. And you connect them up. And you keep doing that and starting a relationship and starting to form connections with people that are actually real relationships, as opposed to, I got a book. Buy it, please. Please, will you buy my book? I need to make my quota this month. You know, you really want to avoid that, although I'm guilty as everybody about it. You know, I want to sell my books too, so I'm guilty of sin. But it's more important to form relationships and keep them going. And then you could say, you know, by the way, I have this book, and it'd be a great favor if you picked it up. It's only $2.99 and wrote a review. And they go, okay, cool, because they know you.
Right.
But if they don't know you, they're probably going to say, sure, cool, and they'll never get around to it. You know how that is.
Well, you know what? And I want to talk about this, because you've already said this, that it takes work to build a network, or to do networking takes, you know, it just takes effort. It takes work. And I think that one of the ways that we can provide service to our connections is by giving them some of the things you talked about, your blog, you know, writing something on LinkedIn, your videos. This is a way for you to deliver service to them without maybe going out of your way too much. But if you do this on a consistent basis, they start to know, like, and trust you. But if you're not doing any of this, then you're wasting your time, I think.
You're wasting your time, and you're annoying people, and they go to that little button that says, they don't usually don't disconnect. They just go to the button that says, I don't want to hear this person anymore. I forget the name of it. And you're turned off.
Yes.
And then you'll never hear from them again.
And so let's talk about this, because you kind of hinted to this, that you don't connect with everybody that connects, that wants to connection with you. So who should you connect with? Talk about this.
Well, for every connection, obviously the first thing you want to do is make sure that it's not a spammer or a scammer. And there's a lot of those. They're pretty obvious usually because they're not from the United States or from whatever country you're in. So they have misspellings or they have a picture that's obviously some beautiful babe off the internet and not them. You know,
it starts with one of my favorite ones is dear friend or dear, you know,
right,
so-and-so,
right.
Dear babe.
they only have four connections or they're brand new. Right. LinkedIn's getting really really good about finding those and deleting them fast. So even if you connect to them, they'll probably be gone right away. But you want to make sure they're not a scammer. The second thing you want to do is ask yourself, is this person of value in my network? It's just a judgment call that you're going to make real quick. Look over their profile. Do they have a picture? No. Okay, I'm probably not going to connect with you if you don't have a picture unless I know that you're somebody that I want to connect with.
Right.
I want to see you. Look at your headline. Does your headline make sense? Or is it buy my stuff? Okay, I'm probably not going to connect with you if it's buy my stuff. look at your, read, just glance over your summary, and it's only 2,000 characters. Is there anything of interest here to what I'm trying to do? Yeah, actually, this guy is a fellow writer. Or no, this guy he's a lion. A lion is somebody who will connect to anybody, and he's just looking for, you know, a notch on his bedpost, so to speak.
Right.
There's lions who have 50,000 connections, and I don't know how they have real jobs. But I mean, how do you have a real job with 50,000 connections?
If you're not sure, or if you've never heard of the tag LION or the acronym, it stands for LinkedIn Open Networker. And the theory behind this is that you're going to connect with all these people, but it's pointless. Like you said, even if you have 50,000 connections, the point of having 50,000 connections is to have 50,000 people get to know, like, and trust you. How are you going to do that? And like you said, and not have another job. So I, like you, I used to connect with lions. I used to connect with anybody. And then, of course, you know, I started limiting the amount of people I connect with because of the same reason. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just want to clarify what a lion was.
Oh, that's fine. And I use lion. I have lion in my headline, but I use it in a different sense. It means I'm not going to report you as a spammer to LinkedIn. That's all it means to me. You know, send me a connection request. That's fine with me. I'm going to evaluate it, and I'll not connect to you if I don't want to. But I'm not going to tell LinkedIn you spam me. Because if you get five of those requests, LinkedIn will get kind of nasty and shut down parts of your account and things, and you have to talk to them. And they don't have a call. You can't call LinkedIn. You have to do it through email. So
yes.
Basically I'm saying I'm a nice guy. I'm not going to report you. But I don't connect to everybody because I got 3,000 people in my network and it's already unmanageable. I don't even know most of those people. But it's not worth the time to go through and delete a bunch. I just don't have the time. Where were we? Oh, we were talking about who to connect with. So
right.
you're looking at connections that have some value to what the brand you're trying to build is. Like, I'm a writer, so I'm looking for people, first of all, fellow writers. I'm looking for people in industries that might want to purchase my writing, vendors, suppliers, things like that. One thing to be careful of, this is something a client pointed out to me that I actually didn't realize until recently, is all your connections are visible to all your connections. Well, if you have a competitor
right.
as a connection, they can see your customers.
Mm.
And you don't want that. You do not want your competitors seeing your customers under normal conditions. So, or your suppliers. You might not want your competitors seeing your suppliers. So you have to be kind of careful that you're not bringing in competition, because they can harvest a lot of data about you if they're connected to you. So you have to be careful there. It has to do with the brand. I'm a writer. I want people who are of interest to me writing, or are going to be clients, or could be clients, or could connect me with clients. I don't necessarily want somebody who's in, you know, a peasant in Uzbekistan. I'm just making that up, because he's not going to be very helpful to me, and I'm not going to be helpful to him. I
sure.
don't know what I would give a peasant in Uzbekistan, you know. Or nuclear power engineer in Minsk. I have no idea. So
right.
other than they're probably not of value to me, and I'd probably say no. Or I'd probably ask him, what's up? Because you can ask him a question before you connect. You can say, well, why are you connecting with me here? What did you see interesting about my profile? And then they can answer that or not. And then you can disconnect or connect. You can always query them.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea. You know what? And that only makes sense. Look, again, if this is a live networking event, you would ask questions. And then if it made sense, you might trade information only if it made sense.
Correct. Yeah, you only have limited time in your life and limited time during the day, and presumably you have a job to do and you're trying to sell products or services or something. So you should spend that time wisely and with people who will be of value. And you can't be of value to 50,000 people in a network like that. You can be of value to a couple hundred, maybe, if you're very powerful,
right.
Maybe a couple hundred.
Yeah, absolutely, so absolutely.
Go ahead. Nope, I'm done.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what, and I think you brought up some really good points. You know, I love the idea of, you know, asking, hey, what's up? Why do you want to connect? What brought you to my profile? And I want to ask you this other question, because the other thing that I've noticed on LinkedIn is you can see people who have looked at your profile.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Do you hear me?
Okay. So my question to you is, do you do anything with that? So if I go and I look at your profile, but maybe I don't connect, do you ever do anything with that? I've heard different strategies. I wanted to get your take on it.
I have a lot of things to do during the day. I probably write 6 or 7 books a month, and I'm publishing and marketing and giving speeches and talking to radio show hosts and all kinds of other things. And to tell you the truth, I don't really have time to go trolling through who's looked at my profile more normally. Sometimes for curiosity, maybe once a month, I take a brief glance and go, oh, right. Why did the CEO of this big Fortune 500 company look at my profile? But it really depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to build your network, if you're a salesperson or you're marketing your product hard, it might be of value to look through there. But I personally haven't found a lot of value to trolling through who's looked at my profile.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and you can send a message out and sometimes they'll respond and sometimes they'll connect, but it's just more work to do during the day that I don't have time for.
Right. And I think what you said is dictates whether or not you're going to do that. And it depends whether you have 3,000 connections or 10 connections. You might want to reach out to these people who've looked at your profile. But you're right, I'm the same way. I don't have time. I just I have a full-time job, and like you, I'm writing and trying to get speaking gigs and doing other stuff and looking at who's looking at me. I haven't found it to be a big benefit yet. Don't have the time.
Well, if I just look at it like a networking event. If I was in a networking event and somebody glanced at me across the room, I probably wouldn't look twice unless that person was somebody very important, and I might not even see them. So why would I do that in LinkedIn?
Right.
Same thing.
Yeah. No. And I think that's a great point. All right. So let's talk about this real quick. What do you say are some of the don'ts? We've talked a lot about what you should be doing. What are some of the things that we shouldn't be doing on LinkedIn?
First of all, it's not Facebook. So save your social media fun and all your fun and games with Facebook or with Google Plus or whichever particular social media you use for socializing, and don't do it on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is not for the math games and the memes and the political rants and all the other stuff that people who don't understand do, because all you do when you do that is you make yourself look stupid.
Right.
LinkedIn is a professional network, and if you were sitting in the middle of a trade show with all of these people who are influencers around you and you were having a political rant or trying to get them interested in a little stupid math puzzle or something, they would be walking away from you and they would not get a good impression of you. And the exact same thing is happening on LinkedIn. So don't do that. Keep your posts and your up status updates and your profile itself and your picture and everything as professional as you possibly could, because everybody who looks at that is judging you. The second thing that's very important with LinkedIn and all social media, actually, is it can be more addicting than heroin. I mean, I have sat down in the morning thinking I'll spend 5 minutes on LinkedIn or Facebook or whichever just to answer some things, and by look up and it's 2 p.m. and I've lost the whole day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's so interesting that you can, like you said, you can go down this rabbit hole and, be, you know, and all you're going to do is update your picture, and then 3 hours later, you're going, what am I doing?
And it all started from, he said, what? And you got to respond, and then he's got to respond, and then you're, before you know it, and you've lost the day. And what I have to do is I have to actually set a timer. Each morning, I set it for 15 minutes, and that is my social media time, whatever the time is. That's my social media time. When that thing dings, I'm done. And that's my social media time, as opposed to my business social media time. And I'm done. So I can reconnect with friends, family, spend 15 minutes doing that ding, move on. Otherwise, it'll grab you and pull you in. And it's hard to, it's worse than heroin. It is. Oh, I've never been on heroin, but
I just like that. Yeah, it is. You know what? And it's one of those things. I'm surprised this hasn't qualified as some kind of disability or disease or whatever, because it is, as you said, it becomes so addictive. It's crazy. I know people who, you know, they spend the whole time on their phone. You can't have a, you know, there's a friend of mine who we've kind of shunned because he can't leave his phone alone. You can't have dinner with him or a conversation or even go to the movies with him because he just can't leave his addiction alone. And it's just what do you call it? It ruins the, you know, having time around him. So it is as addictive as heroin.
Oh, yeah, especially when you see somebody who's on a date with a gorgeous woman and he's sitting there playing on the cell phone. It's like, dude, what are you doing? You've got a gorgeous woman sitting 3 feet from you. And you're on the cell phone with your buddies. Where's your brain, you know?
Where's your brain? It, absolutely. So I think that's a perfect commentary. If you're on a date and you are looking at your phone more than your date, you are sick and you need to get help, period.
Either that, or you have absolutely no interest in that date, and you shouldn't be there in the first place.
But you know what's so funny, though, Richard, is my wife and I go out, and we see a lot of young people, and they're both on their phones on a date. It's like, really?
I know.
I mean,
and
what's
weird is they're texting each other.
They probably are. You know, they're
3 feet away. Yeah.
it's so
bizarre.
Funny because if I did that on a date with my wife, she would just slap me there in public. She was just, you know, what are you doing? We're on a date. Anyway, so Richard, hey, it's been a blast having you on the show. What's that?
You would be toast if you did that on a date with your wife.
Yes, absolutely correct. Anyway, Richard G. Lowe, it's been a blast having you on the show. About LinkedIn, you can find out more about Richard G. Lowe Jr. on Amazon. He's all over the internet. You can also connect with him on LinkedIn. Richard, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
You bet. All righty. Good stuff there from Richard G. Lowe Jr. on LinkedIn strategies. As always, it's good to have you guys here. We're always so appreciative and thankful for everything that you guys do to help our show. Remember, as always, you were created to succeed.